Brother awoke as the afternoon light dragged across the desert. His mouth tasted of snake. Om was butting him on the foot.
Come on! Come on! You're missing the best bit of the day!
Is there any water?
Brother murmured thickly.
There will be. Only 5 miles off. Amazing luck.
Brother pulled himself up. Every muscle ached.
How do you know? I can sense it. I am a god, you know.
You said you could only sense minds.
Om cursed. Brother didn't forget things.
It's more complicated than that, lied Om. Trust me. Come on while there's some twilight, and don't forget Mr. Vorbis.
Vorbis was curled up. He looked at Brother with unfocused eyes, stood up like a man still asleep when Brother helped him.
I think he might have been poisoned, said Brother. There's sea creatures with stings and poisonous corals. He keeps moving his lips, but I can't make out what he's trying to say.
Bring him along, said Om. Bring him along. Oh, yes.
You wanted me to abandon him last night, said Brother.
Oh, did I?
Said Om, his very shell radiating innocence.
Well, maybe I've been to ethics. Had a change of heart. I can see he's with us for a purpose now. Good old Vorbis. Bring him along.
Simony and the two philosophers stood on the cliff-top, looking across the parched farmlands of Omnia to the distant rock of the citadel. Two of them looking, anyway.
Give me a lever and a place to stand, and I'll smash that place like an egg, said Simony, leading Didactylos down the narrow path.
Looks big, said Erne.
See the gleam? Those are the doors.
Look massive.
I was wondering, said Simony, about the boat, the way it moved. Something like that could smash the doors, right?
You'd have to flood the valley, said Erne.
I mean, if it were on wheels.
Oh, yes, said Erne, sarcastically.
It had been a long day.
Yes, if I had a forge and half a dozen blacksmiths and a lot of help. Wheels? No problem. But
we shall have to see, said Simony, what we can do.
The sun was on the horizon when Brother, his arm around Vorbis's shoulders, reached the next rock island. It was bigger than the one with the snake. The wind had carved the stones into gaunt, unlikely shapes like fingers. There were even plants lodging in crevices in the rock.
There's water somewhere, said Brother. There's always water, even in the worst deserts, said Om. 1 or maybe 2 inches of rain a year.
I can smell something, said Brother, as his feet stopped treading on the sand and crunched up the limestone scree around the boulders.
Something rank. Hold me over your head.
Om scanned the rocks.
Right, now bring me down again. And head for that rock that looks like, that looks very unexpected, really.
Brother stared.
It does too, he croaked eventually. Amazing to think it was carved by the wind.
The wind god has a sense of humour, said Om, although it's pretty basic.
Near the foot of the rock, huge slabs had fallen over the years, forming a jagged pile with here and there shadowy openings.
That smell, Brother began, probably animals come to drink the water, said Om.
Brother's foot kicked against something yellow-white, which bounced away among the rocks, making a noise like a sackful of coconuts. In the stifling, empty silence of the desert, it echoed loudly.
What was that? Definitely not a skull, lied Om. Don't worry.
There's bones everywhere.
Well, what did you expect? This is a desert. People die here. It's a very popular occupation in this vicinity.
Brother picked up a bone. He was, as he well knew, stupid, but people didn't gnaw their own bones after they died.
Om? There's water here, shouted Om. We need it, but there's probably one or two drawbacks.
What kind of drawbacks?
As in natural hazards.
Like,
well, you know, lions, said Om desperately.
There's lions here.
Well, slightly.
Slightly lions.
Well, only one lion.
Only one?
generally a solitary creature. Most to be feared are the old males who are forced into the most inhospitable regions by their younger rivals. They are evil-tempered and cunning, and in their extremity have lost all fear of man."
The memory faded, letting go of Brother's vocal cords.
"That kind?" Brother finished. "It won't take any notice of us once it's fed," said Om.
"Yeah?
They go to sleep.
After feeding?"
Brother looked round at Vorbis, who was slumped against a rock.
Feeding, he repeated.
"It'll be a kindness," said Om.
"To the lion, yes. You want to use him as bait?"
"He's not going to survive the desert. Anyway, he's done much worse to thousands of people. He'll be dying for a good cause."
"A good cause?
I like it."
There was a growl from somewhere in the stones. It wasn't loud, but it was a sound with sinews in it. Brother backed away.
"We don't just throw people to the lions." "He does."
"Yes, I don't."
"All right, we'll get on top of a slab, and when the lion starts on him, you can brain it with a rock. You'll probably get away with an arm or a leg. You'll never miss it."
"No, you can't do that to people just because they're helpless."
"You know, I can't think of a better time."
There was another growl from the rock pile. It sounded closer. Brother looked down desperately at the scattered bones. Among them, half hidden by debris, was a sword. It was old and not well made, and scoured by sand. He picked it up gingerly by the blade.
"Other end," said Om.
"I know."
"Can you use one?"
"I don't know."
"I really hope you're a fast learner."
The lion emerged slowly. Desert lions, it has been said, are not like the lions of the veldt. They had been when the great desert had been verdant woodland, i.e. before the inhabitants had let goats graze everywhere. Nothing makes a desert like a goat. Then there had been time to lie around for most of the day, looking majestic in between regular meals of goat, but not enough. But the woodland had become scrubland, the scrubland had become, well, poorer scrubland, and the goats and the people and eventually even the cities went away. The lions stayed. There's always something to eat if you're hungry enough. People still had to cross the desert. There were lizards, there were snakes. It wasn't much of an ecological niche, but the lions were hanging on to it like grim death, which was what happened to most people who met a desert lion. Someone had already met this one. Its mane was matted, ancient scars crisscrossed its pelt. It dragged itself towards Brother, back legs trailing uselessly.
"It's hurt," said Brother.
"Oh, good. And there's plenty of eating on one of those," said Om. "A bit stringy, but..."
The lion collapsed, its toast-rack chest heaving. A spear was protruding from its flank. Flies, which can always find something to eat in any desert, flew up in a swarm. Brother put down the sword. Om stuck his head in his shell.
"Oh, no," he murmured. 20 million people in this world, and the only one who believes in me is a suicide."
"We can't just leave it," said Brother.
"We can, we can. It's a lion. You leave lions alone."
Brother knelt down. The lion opened one crusted yellow eye, too weak even to bite him.
"You're going to die. You're going to die. I'm not going to find anyone to believe in me out here."
Brother's knowledge of animal anatomy was rudimentary. Although some of the Inquisitors had an enviable knowledge of the insides of the human body that is denied to all those who are not allowed to open it while it's still working, medicine, as such, was frowned upon in Omnia. But somewhere in every village was someone who officially didn't set bones, and who didn't know a few things about certain plants, and who stayed out of reach of the Quisition because of the fragile gratitude of their patients. And every peasant picked up a smattering of knowledge. Acute toothache can burn through all but the strongest in faith. Brother grasped the spear haft. The lion growled as he moved it.
"Can't you speak to it?" said Brother.
"It's an animal."
"So are you. You could try and calm it down, because if it gets excited..."
Om snapped into concentration. In fact, the lion's mind contained nothing but pain, a spreading nebula of the stuff, overcoming even the normal background hunger. Om tried to encircle the pain, make it flow away, and not to think about what would happen if it went. By the feel of the things, the lion had not eaten for days. The lion grunted as Brother withdrew the spearhead. "Omnian," he said. "It hasn't been there long. They must have met the soldiers when they were on their way to Ephib. They must have passed close by." He tore another strip from his robe and tried to clean the wound.
"We want to eat it, not cure it," shouted Om. "What you thinking of? You think it's going to be grateful?"
"It wanted to be helped."
"And soon it'll want to be fed. Have you thought about that?"
"It's looking pathetically at me. Probably never seen a week's meals all walking around on one pair of legs before."
That wasn't true, Om reflected. Brother was shedding weight like an ice cube out here in the desert. That kept him alive. The boy was a two-legged camel. Brother crunched towards the rock pile, shards and bones shifting under his feet. The boulders formed a maze of half-open tunnels and caves. By the smell, the lion had lived there for a long time and had quite often been ill. He stared at the nearest cave for some time.
"What's so fascinating about a lion's den?" said Om.
"The way it's got steps down into it, I think," said Brother.
Didactylos could feel the crowd. It filled the barn.
"How many are there?" he said.
"Hundreds," said Urn. "They're even sitting on the rafters. And, Master?"
"Yes?"
"There's even one or two priests. And dozens of soldiers."
"Don't worry," said Simony, joining them on the makeshift platform made of fig barrels. "They are turtle believers, just like you. We have friends in unexpected places."
"But I don't, Didactylos began helplessly.
"There isn't anyone here who doesn't hate the church with all their soul," said Simony.
"But that's not, they're just waiting for someone to lead them."
"But,
I know you won't let us down. You're a man of reason. Urn, come over here. There's a blacksmith I want you to meet."
Didactylos turned his face to the crowd. He could feel the hot, hushed silence of their stares. Each drop took minutes. It was hypnotic. Brother found himself staring at each developing drip. It was almost impossible to see it grow, but they'd been growing and dripping for thousands of years.
"How?" said Om.
"Water seeps down after the rains," said Brother. "It lodges in the rocks. Don't gods know these things?"
"We don't need to." Om looked around. "Let's go. I hate this place."
"It's just an old temple. There's nothing here."
"That's what I mean."
Sand and rubble half filled it. Light lanced in through the broken roof high above, onto the slope that they'd climbed down. Brother wondered how many of the wind-carved rocks in the desert had once been buildings. This one must have been huge, perhaps a mighty tower. And then the desert had come. There were no whispering voices here. Even the small gods kept away from abandoned temples, for the same reason that people kept away from graveyards. The only sound was the occasional plink of the water. It dripped into a shallow pool in front of what looked like an altar. From the pool, it had worn a groove in the slabs of the floor, all the way to a round pit, which appeared to be bottomless. There were a few statues, all of them toppled. They were heavy proportioned, lacking any kind of detail, each one a child's clay model chiselled in granite. The distant walls had once been covered with some kind of bas-relief, but it had crumbled away, except in a few places, which showed strange designs that mainly consisted of tentacles.
"Who were the people who lived here?" said Brother.
"I don't know."
"What god did they worship?"
"I don't know."
"The statues are made of granite, but there's no granite near here."
"They were very devout then. They dragged it all the way."
"And the altar block is covered in grooves."
"Ah, extremely devout. That would be to let the blood run off."
"You really think they did human sacrifice?"
"I don't know. I want to get out of here."
"Why? There's water and it's cool."
Because a god lived here, a powerful god. Thousands worshipped it. I can feel it, you know? It comes out of the walls. A great god. Mighty were his dominions, and magnificent was his word. Armies went forth in his name and conquered and slew. That kind of thing. And now no one, not you, not me, no one even knows who the god was or his name or what he looked like. Lions drink in the holy places, and those little squidgy things with eight legs, there's one by your foot, what do you call them? The ones with antenna, crawl beneath the altar. Now do you understand?
No, said Brother.
Don't you fear death? You're a human.
Brother considered this. A few feet away, Vorbis stared mutely at the patch of sky.
He's awake. He's just not speaking.
Who cares? I didn't ask you about him.
Well, sometimes, when I'm on catacomb duty, it's the kind of place where you can't help, all the skulls and things. And the book says,
there you are, said Om,
a note of bitter triumph in his voice.
You don't know. That's what stops everyone going mad, the uncertainty of it, the feeling that it might work out right after all. But it's different for gods, we do know. You know that story about the sparrow flying through a room?
No.
Everyone knows it.
Not me.
About life being like a sparrow flying through a room, nothing but darkness outside, and it flies through the room, and there's just a moment of warmth and light.
There are windows open, said Brother.
Can't you imagine what it's like to be that sparrow, and know about the darkness, to know that afterwards there'll be nothing to remember, ever, except that one moment of the light?
No.
No, of course you can't. But that's what it's like, being a god. And this place, it's a morgue.
Brother looked around at the ancient shadowy temple.
Well, do you know what it's like being human?
Om's head darted into his shell for a moment, the nearest he was capable of to a shrug.
Compared to a god, easy. Get born, obey a few rules, do what you're told, die, forget.
Brother stared at him.
Is something wrong?
Brother shook his head. Then he stood up and walked over to the Vorbis. The deacon had drunk water from Brother's cupped hands, but there was a switched-off quality about him. He walked, he drank, he breathed. Or something did. His body did. The dark eyes opened, but appeared to be looking at nothing that Brother could see. There was no sense that anyone was looking out through them. Brother was certain that if he walked away, Vorbis would sit on the cracked flagstones until he very gently fell over. Warbus's body was present, but the whereabouts of his mind was probably not locatable on any normal atlas. It was just that, here and now and suddenly, Brother felt so alone that even Vorbis was good company.
Why'd you bother with him? He's had thousands of people killed.
Yes, but perhaps he thought you wanted it.
I never said I wanted that.
You didn't care, said Brother.
But I... Shut up!
Om's mouth opened in astonishment.
You could have helped people, said Brother, but all you did was stamp around and roar and try to make people afraid, like a man hitting a donkey with a stick. But people like Vorbis made the stick so good, that's all the donkey ends up believing in.
That could use some work, as a parable, said Om, sourly.
This is real life I'm talking about.
It's not my fault if people misuse the...
It is. It has to be. If you muck up people's minds just because you want them to believe in you, what they do is all your fault.
Brother glared at the tortoise and then stamped off towards the pile of rubble that dominated one end of the ruined temple. He rummaged around in it.
What are you looking for?
We'll need to carry water, said Brother.
There won't be anything, said Om. People just left. The land ran out and so did the people. They took everything with them. Why bother to look?
Brother ignored him. There was something under the rocks and sand.
Why worry about Vorbis? Om whined. In 100 years' time he'll be dead anyway. We'll all be dead.
Brother tugged at the piece of curved pottery. It came away and turned out to be about 2/3 of a wide bowl, broken right across. It had been almost as wide as Brother's outstretched arms, but had been too broken for anyone to loot.
It was useful for nothing, but it had once been useful for something. There were embossed figures round its rim. Brother peered at them for want of something to distract himself while Om's voice droned on in his head. The figures looked more or less human, and they were engaged in religion. You could tell by the knives. It's not murder if you do it for a god. In the centre of the bowl was a larger figure, obviously important, some kind of god they were doing it for.
"What?" he said. "I said, in 100 years' time, we'll all be dead."
Brother stared at the figures round the bowl. No one knew who their god was, and they were gone. Lion slept in the holy places, and Cylopodon aridius, the common desert centipede, his memory resident library supplied, scuttled beneath the altar.
"Yes," said Brother, "we will."
He raised the bowl over his head and turned. Om ducked into his shell.
"But here," Brother gritted his teeth as he staggered under the weight, "and now..."
He threw the bowl. It landed against the altar, fragments of ancient pottery fountained up and clattered down again. The echoes boomed around the temple.
"We are alive!"
He picked up Om, who had withdrawn completely into his shell.
"And we'll make it home, all of us," he said. "I know it."
"It's written, is it?" said Om, his voice muffled.
"It is said, and if you argue, a tortoise shell is a pretty good water container, I expect."
"You wouldn't. Who knows, I might. In 100 years' time we'll all be dead, you said."
Yes, said Om desperately. But here and now..."
"Right."
Didactylos smiled. It wasn't something that came easily to him. It wasn't that he was a somber man, but he could not see the smiles of others. It took several dozen muscle movements to smile, and there was no return on his investment. He'd spoken many times to crowds in Ephebe, but they were invariably made up of other philosophers, whose shouts of "bloody daft" and "you're making it up as you go along" and other contributions to the debate always put him at his ease. That was because no one really paid any attention. They were just working out what they were going to say next. But this crowd put him in mind of Brother. Their listening was like a huge pit, waiting for his words to fill it. The trouble was that he was talking in philosophy, but they were listening in gibberish.
"You can't believe in Great Artuin," he said. "Great Artuin exists. There's no point in believing in things that exist."
"Someone's put up their hand," said Urn.
"Yes?"
"Sir, surely only things that exist are worth believing in," said the inquirer, who was wearing a uniform of a sergeant of the Holy Guard.
"If they exist, you don't have to believe in them," said Didactylos. "They just are," he sighed. "What can I tell you? What do you want to hear? I just wrote down what people know. Mountains rise and fall, and under them the turtle swims onwards. Men live and die, and the turtle moves. Empires grow and crumble, and the turtle moves. Gods come and go, and still the turtle moves. The turtle moves."
From the darkness came a voice.
"And that is really true?"
Didactylos shrugged.
"The turtle exists. The world is a flat disc. The sun turns round it once every day, dragging its light behind it. And this will go on happening whether you believe it is true or not. It is real. I don't know about the truth. Truth is a lot more complicated than that. I don't think the turtle gives a bugger whether it's true or not, to tell you the truth."
Simony pulled Urn to one side as the philosopher went on talking.
"This isn't what they came to hear. Can't you do anything?"
"Sorry?" said Urn.
"They don't want philosophy. They want a reason to move against the church. Now, Forbis is dead. The Cenobiarch is gaga. The hierarchy are busy stabbing one another in the back. The citadel is like a big, rotten plum."
"Still a few wasps in it, though," said Urn. "You said you've only got a tenth of the army."
"But they're free men," said Simony, "free in their heads. They'll be fighting for more than 50 cents a day."
Urn looked down at his hands. He often did that when he was uncertain about anything, as if they were the only things he was sure of in all the world.
"They'll get the odds down to 3-1 before the rest know what's happening," said Simony grimly. "Did you talk to the blacksmith?"
"Yes,"
Can you do it?
I think so. It wasn't what I...
They tortured his father just for having a horseshoe hanging up in his forge when everyone knows that smiths have to have their little rituals. And they took his son off into the army. But he's got a lot of helpers. They'll work through the night. All you have to do is tell them what you want.
I've made some sketches.
Good, said Simony. Listen, Erne. The church is run by people like Vorbis. That's how it all works. Millions of people have died for nothing but lies. We can stop all that.
Didactylos had stopped talking.
He's muffed it, said Simony. He could have done anything with them, and he just told them a lot of facts. You can't inspire people with facts. They need a cause. They need a symbol.